Hi, I'm Rob, and this is Rewind and Review. Once again, joined by the man that, for today, I'm going to call the Worm Guy.
Please don't do that. But anyway, I am Jason.
And hi, Jason.
Today in the studio, we're flying solo. Intern James was here.
Indeed.
And is still floating around, but he's tied up trying to sort out this rewinding machine issue that we've got.
As you know, we're stuck still here, unable to rewind, unable to fast forward, and definitely no moving sideways. We're stuck here, ladies and gentlemen, in 1998.
But if you're a listener, or if you're a new listener, I should say, you've probably got no idea what is going on here. But we need help. Share this podcast so someone can help us
get home.
But whilst we're here anyway, we might as well do the show. What we aim to do with Rewind and Review is have a look at a property that has been around for a while and delve into its legacy, how it's held up over time, and even give our own personal experiences, whether we watched it as a kid or sometime later in our lives.
Yep. So being stuck in this year allows us to look at another movie that celebrates its 20th anniversary in this year, 2018. So yes, 20 years. So we're already here in 1998, but just for consistency reasons, we're going to play our rewinding intro anyway.
We have to go back!
Go back, Sam!
What year is it?
Are you telling me you built a time machine?
...1998 was a notable year for movies. It was the year of the biggest monster movie yet. Or was it? Godzilla!
Hey! So this American monster film was directed and co-written by Roland Emmerich, serving as a reimagining of Toho's Godzilla franchise. It was the 23rd Godzilla film, and the first to be completely produced by Hollywood Studio. Essentially, American Godzilla. In Godzilla, during the nuclear tests in the 1960s, the French government inadvertently mutates a marine iguana nest. Years later, a giant lizard makes its way to New York City. Dr. Nico Topopopoulos.
I'm glad you got that. You're struggling with that.
I.e. Matthew Broderick, an expert with the effects of radiation on animals, is sent by the US government to study the beast. When the creature dubbed Godzilla, or Godzilla, by the news outlets, emerges, a massive battle with the military begins. To make matters worse, Nick discovers that Godzilla has laid a nest of over 200 eggs, which are ready to hatch.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Now that's a monster movie. There it is.
Worm Guy, talk to me a little bit about your personal experience, please.
Damn it. I distinctly remember this being a movie that I'd seen in the cinema. I swear back in the day, when I was a kid, it didn't actually go that much, but this was one that I'd seen. I think at the time I didn't know of the Japanese Godzilla. I basically just saw this as being a big dinosaur type of movie, and we all know the appeal that that would have had on me.
Indeed.
So the eight-year-old in me basically loved this movie and became obsessed with everything related to it. I grabbed all the toys. My mum helped me out with that, although she didn't let me get everything I wanted. But heaps of merchandise and stuff that I could. I don't have all of it anymore.
That's a shame.
Probably at my mum's house somewhere in a box.
I never got any merch from this film.
I have a Godzilla puppet in my movie room.
Oh, that's amazing.
Should I go grab it?
You can show me later.
Okay.
You can show me later.
I did realize, of course, that, you know, well, now, as I got older, I realized that this movie is incredibly flawed. Like, it's not great. But
tell her how it is.
It has served as a guilty pleasure of mine. And I have to say, it receives a watch at least once a year.
Really?
Yeah, it
annually.
Really is.
No. Yeah. Okay. So it doesn't do that. It's not. It doesn't get that big of a repeat viewing for me. But look, it was very much the same though. Cinema watched it. I was riding on the high of other recently released dinosaur movies of that time. We won't mention them. I was at the age of 12 at that time. So very
12,
impressionable.
12.
Now, I was not then familiar with any of the previous Godzilla properties, and I'm still not. You know, all I know is with the previous Godzilla ones is that it was a dude in a suit kicking over boxes.
Yeah, sort of Power Rangers-esque.
So for me, I had my nostalgia with the dinosaur element stuff, but I also really looked at this in a completely fresh,
eyes. Sure, yeah.
So I really didn't have any ownership or any of what the critics would probably say is one of the downsides of this movie. I didn't have any connection to the previous materials.
Right. So you're coming in this watching it basically fresh.
Yeah. And now, so my most recent viewing, you say you watch it annually. I haven't seen it for about 8 years. And so this morning, my wife and I watched it in preparation for this podcast.
That is pretty fresh.
It's very fresh. That's pretty fresh. As fresh as it comes. And I have to admit, similar to yourself, you know, it's not the most perfect movie. No. But it does have a soft spot. So, it definitely captured my imagination. It was on high rotation with my VHS collection back in the day. A lot of the movies we talk about are high rotation movies, admittedly. It did capture my imagination to the point that I would reenact the climatic taxi chase scene with my younger brother. Quite a while ago. Obviously,
I didn't do it last year. On the streets in your car?
No. And so we would have a toy dragon and a Matchbox car.
Oh, yeah.
And we'd just play around with that. Definitely. And it was just so much fun.
I mean, I'd do the exact same thing with my Godzilla puppet. I swear, I can go grab it.
No, we'll check it out later. that's my personal experience.
Righty, well, let's get into the legacy, everything that this movie has brought to us.
Yeah.
The box office... as we normally do, $379 million box office against a $130 million budget,
yeah.
Which in monetary terms at the time is technically a box office success, but a disappointment to Sony or TriStar at the time anyway, as they actually expected better numbers for that particular opening weekend anyway, being Memorial Day.
It's a big weekend in America,
And it also opened to negative reviews.
I wonder why.
But I mean, they're decent numbers. Just Sony or TriStar, greedy. They just want more.
Is the 130 though? Is that just production budget or is that marketing? I wonder. Because I remember it. It's pretty hard sometimes.
Usually these figures are production budgets.
Yeah.
Maybe put in another 10 to 20 million on marketing, perhaps.
Man, it was everywhere.
They were putting
it was all over the TV.
Yeah, the TV spots. Obviously the merchandise and stuff you had, but the merchandise, you know, makes money. At the start, anyway.
You had
ads on the side of buses, like this bus is as long as my foot or something. I think that was the tag. You know, the whole thing was size does matter.
I didn't see that. That's pretty awesome.
They really took that for a ride.
Yeah.
The movie still made more money worldwide than any other American movie based on a foreign film at the time anyway. And it held that record until the 2014 American-produced Godzilla film.
Which is a great flick. Did you like it?
It is, yes. Yeah, I mean...
I liked it. I thought...
it is different. It's very different from this movie.
Oh, certainly. But we'll talk about it probably a little bit later. So it wasn't received very well though, was it? So I believe it received 2 Golden Raspberry Awards for worst remake or sequel and worst screenplay. Yeah, that's an accolade, isn't it?
I mean, they're pretty bad. That's...
But I believe that there was a planned sequel.
There was.
That's the case. Yeah.
They actually wanted to make 3... I want to make a trilogy out of this. But obviously, as things went, audience response to this film...
It's an ambitious thing, though, because I don't think Emmerich has ever done a trilogy.
Sequel, yeah.
Even a sequel at that point, had he?
Well, whether or not
he's riding off the high of Independence Day. But
whether or not he was going to be attached, you know, that's something to have been questioned. Yeah. But TriStar or Sony or whatever would have just taken the features like further, I guess, even with or without him.
Yeah.
So,
well, they definitely tried to make a sequel, didn't they?
Yeah, but it was abandoned. But instead, they replaced it with an animated series, Godzilla, the series, which ran from 1998 to 2000. So they didn't waste any time putting it out.
Yeah.
And it lasted a couple of years.
Yeah, okay. Just talking a little bit about the negative critical reception, I know there are a couple of reasons why, and I think we'll talk a little bit later. But from my understanding, I believe it deviated too far from the source material. In a nutshell, and that's one of the big critiques about it. But I just wanted to throw it in there, like to a viewer who doesn't actually know the source material, I feel like it copped a bit more flack, but that could just be my own childhood screaming out.
The whole idea was that Emmerich and the other writer, which I don't have in front of me right now, but they wanted to make a movie about Godzilla as if it was an original thing that they were coming up with then and there.
Definitely.
So they... You know, it's kind of bad that they wanted to sidestep from the source material and all the other things that had come before. But they were like, you know, if we were going to make a movie about like a lizard that gets mutated from radiation.
Yeah.
What would we do? We'd make this, and they'd design it this way, and they'd have it do this and that, and yeah. that's what they put into this movie. So, like, in one hand, I commend them for that, but at the same time, yeah. I'm also like, you know, there is obviously an ownership of the character that you should sort of pay tribute to. But Toho, you know, the intellectual property owners of Godzilla,
yeah.
you know, they've had countless movies beforehand. It wasn't until 2004 that they actually began trademarking future incarnations of this Godzilla. So,
yeah.
if that makes sense. So, this Godzilla, his design and stuff, if he was to feature, which he does feature in other
materials,
Toho yeah. distributed films or produced films.
Oh, really?
There's one, I think it was, it could be Godzilla 2000 or Godzilla Final Wars.
Okay.
Yeah, one of them, I can't confirm. But this Godzilla appears, but they refer to him as Zilla.
Right. Just to distance the brand a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, basically. So they no longer want to refer to this Godzilla as Godzilla.
Yeah. So that's the immediate legacy from it. Let's start dissecting it a little bit.
Yeah, let's talk about this Godzilla that we get here. Which is AKA essentially
American Godzilla.
The American Godzilla. Or Zilla, which they would prefer us to call it.
Wants us to say, yeah.
But you know, like as I said, you know, there's been so many features, movies about Godzilla beforehand from 1954.
Yeah.
32 films.
It's pretty crazy.
As of now, produced by Toho, and 3 actual Hollywood films. One of them being this Godzilla, the other one the 2014 Godzilla. There was another one that was. It was a Hollywood-produced one, but it was basically a remake of a Japanese one, and they used footage, like Japanese footage.
Yeah.
Again, sort of like how they produce the Power Rangers TV shows. Like, they just took footage and then put American actors. And
Yeah. It was 32 in total. What were some of the ones
that were made? There's heaps. There's obviously Godzilla from 1954, Godzilla Raid again from 55. King Kong versus Godzilla 62, and we're getting one of those from Legendary Pictures, which is a sequel to Kong Skull Island and the Godzilla from 2014.
Yep.
Mothra versus Godzilla from 64, Son of Godzilla, Destroy All Monsters. What else is there? Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla.
Godzilla 2000, Millennium.
And Godzilla Final Wars. There was heaps more. I didn't list them all there, but yeah, there's so many.
Yep.
With the original film having Godzilla serve as an allegory for the effects of the hydrogen bomb and the consequences that such weapons might have on Earth. So basically a cautionary tale. You know, these weapons, they're bad. Yep. Not just for killing people, but all the other effects, like creating big monsters.
Which I feel still is a very prominent, you know, theme in this movie as well. Like, it's definitely
there. I mean, they do have that aspect of it, and that's what's good. So
it does link back a little bit, but you can see that it is still such a deviation from the source material, regardless anyway.
But when it came to designing this Godzilla for this Emmerich movie, it's funny, he was designed by, or the design they went with was from a guy called Patrick Totopoulos. Like Nick, yes.
Totopoulos.
Emmerich wanted basically something different from the Toho designs.
Right.
Like I said before, like, he just believed that it didn't make sense, you know, the Toho design of it. You know, he was like, well, if we're going to get a lizard and mutate it, this is how it would probably mutate and logically would sort of. And it's like, I kind of go with it. It's like, yeah, Godzilla does look like a big iguana.
Oh, absolutely. The way it walks, even though it's bipedal. When it's crawling through the tunnels,
like
and things like that,
and stuff,
that kind of stuff. So
there was a previous design though from, and I think we mentioned this on our Twister Rewind.
Yeah,
The director Jan de Bont, he had designed a Godzilla that did actually sort of honor the classic Toho design a lot more faithfully. But again, Emmerich was like,
we're gonna twist that up.
Do our own thing.
We're gonna twist it up. Well. Look, you know, there's different elements too, the way it's represented. Like, he can burrow, which we're just talking about, which is very similar to some lizards. But he doesn't have the atomic breath, which is kind of a trademark of Toho's. But, you know, as you see in the movie, it does have something. He's got some kind of breath that's combustible.
Yeah, so he can, like, blow onto, like, fire, and that'll, like, explode.
Yeah.
So, and create sort of like a flamethrower kind of effect. Yeah. That works.
But a new part of the representation is he also has incredibly disgusting breath, because when he blows it on on Nick, bits of pieces of fish and stuff hit him in the face.
Oh, but I mean, that's...
it's just gross.
Real, I suppose.
But, and, you know, he has the ability... he, she, we don't... I don't know. Has the ability to lay hundreds of eggs. Yeah.
I was like, say the word.
So Jason wants me to say via parthenogenesis.
Yeah, I think that's how you say it.
Yeah, well, that's what's going to have to
how do. To reproduce asexually.
So, what about his chin, Jason?
Yeah, the prominent chin. My notes here say inspired by the tiger Shere Khan from The Jungle Book.
That's a cool little fact.
Yeah, that or Jay Leno. I'm not sure.
Massive protruding chin. Look, I really like this representation, mainly because I didn't know the other one. But I thought it actually reflected a really solid origin story. I mean, from aesthetically, it's really good to see that connection to iguanas. You understood as a viewer where it was coming from and how it was related, whereas the other one is just a big giant dinosaur, right? Or dinosaur-esque. And when I say dinosaur,
oh, like big lizard.
Big lizard, but you kind of like what a T-Rex used to look like back in the 20s before they started recataloging the fossil record and stuff, which kind of makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
Why that's the representation. But either way, I really thought this fitted, but I don't have a connection to the previous source material.
With this Godzilla, like the movie actually states that this isn't Godzilla. Like, it's kind of pretty clearly there. Like, it's within the story. It's the first couple of scenes that sets this up. You know, you see the nuclear blast and stuff obviously affecting that nest of iguanas.
Yeah.
You see the, obviously, that it's implied that it mutates and it becomes this big lizard thing. It's only because of this big lizard attacking the Japanese sailing ship or fishing ship at the start of the movie that one Japanese fisherman...
So it's
mistakes or claims that he saw Godzilla. And that's obviously referring to the Japanese mythos of the Godzilla or the Gojira or whatever it is.
But nowhere does it actually say this is the Godzilla from previous materials.
It's only because of the newsman reporter character, Kamen, obviously seeing that footage and basically dubbing this creature Godzilla.
Yeah.
But really, this movie clearly states that this isn't Godzilla. Mm. This is just a big mutated iguana.
A big giant lizard.
And then they trademarked it, put it on the... they packaged it. They're selling it. No, they put it on the poster and they named the movie it. And all the characters within this movie referred to him as Godzilla. But yeah, it clearly isn't.
Mm.
So in a way, it's kind of like the movie itself is financially capitalizing on the Godzilla trademark. But the character isn't Godzilla.
No, it's not.
And they clearly say that it's like not.
It, though.
I mean, it follows the same...
Narrative
of creation and stuff. But that's pretty much where it ends.
Yeah, right. Well, I feel, just from a story point of view, right? So taking away from the source materials and all that, just forget about that for a second. I think that this was actually a movie that was before its time. So it was... But in a bad sense. I mean, in regard to... choosing an appropriate time to do a gritty remake. So remember the reimagining of The Batman Begins. That was 2005, right?
Right.
Perfect timing. For some reason, that timing worked perfectly for a gritty reimagining of a character rather than a different...
Like, you reckon if we got that in 1998, again, when Batman and Robin came out?
I don't think it would have worked because at that point, we were kind of at slapsticky Batman.
We were reeling from Batman Forever, weren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think... If you just think, you know, take a little step back, these kind of gritty retellings of stories are actually really quite well received now. So if it was made now with, I really think it'd be received.
Basically, if it was written better, if the effects were slightly better.
Okay, yeah. Look, I do have caveat. I feel like the story's got merit, but it just wasn't delivered really, really well. And we're going to touch on that as well, but... Yeah, I think the fact that this was like a reimagining, but it was in 1998 instead of, say, 2008, is a big thing. Is a big deal and one reason why it wasn't received so well.
So you reckon these days we're more open to total retoolings and rewrites of things?
I think so.
Like, we'll accept it.
I think so. But that's just me. I'm just a person. I'm just a man. So, yeah, look, it's got merit, but, you know, it wasn't delivered as well as it could have been, possibly. Let's go into a bit of the characters.
Right.
Let's talk to me about that. Well, overall, can I just say, I don't think the characters are a problem. I think they were very interesting. I think there's a lack of chemistry between them.
It was how the characters were really written.
Really crappy and what dialogue.
The dialogue is.
It was just crap.
You can say shit.
It's shit.
You can say shit.
It was so shit. And this is coming from only like 4 hours ago, ladies and gentlemen. 4 hours ago.
Like, that's a fresh review right there.
But, you know, I like a lot of these actors for, like, you know, their own merits and their previous performances and everything else. They're fantastic for the most part.
Except maybe one.
But a couple, actually. But anyway, but, you know, Matthew Broderick as Nick Totopoulos, you know, he's a nerdy science nerd. He studies worms and giant lizards. But, you know, it's and he knows a little bit about pregnancy tests, which is a little bit unsettling.
Which is a little bit incorrect as well.
Oh, okay.
So incorrect.
I liked him. He's just like an average nerdy dude thrown into a really weird situation. And he's been picked as a leader of a field. It's not his problem. It's not his fault.
I mean, like, they basically pluck him out for as an advisory sort of role.
Yeah.
And then because he keeps coming up with sort of the right answers,
they keep him on board.
They keep sort of putting him at the, like, they eventually put him at the table.
Well, I feel like Matthew Broderick really had no choice but to make this character look really dumb, though, based on his dialogue.
Like, I mean, it's the dialogue that he was given. Like, he yeah. obviously is quite clever. Like,
well, he's, you know, he's got the smarts, like, but he's got maybe no nous, like no social skills, maybe, perhaps.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, like, his whole like, sort of love story with Audrey.
Yeah. But anyway, look, I thought he did what he could, and I'm a fan of Broderick.
Yeah.
So, but look, there's not much you can really do with that. What about Philippe? Was it Roach?
I think it's Roach.
Roach? Jean Reno. What did you think about him?
Oh, he's the Frenchiest French guy who ever Frenched.
Indeed.
He's so
that's
French.
That's on my notes. But he is so French, and this is an issue I have with the actual movie itself is... it is incredibly stereotypical, but I think we might touch on that a little bit later, further down the road as well. But
no French toast.
I like French roast.
Oh, that's the coffee, yeah?
It's the coffee,
no,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure at some point he's like...
Where's a French toast?
He's like...
No, he goes, no croissant. Because they're holding a donut.
Oh, yes.
It's like, oh, it's such a fish out of water moment. But look, I actually really like Jean Reno. Have you seen Leon the Professional?
Yes,
Great movie.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he is actually an excellent actor. Like, he's up there.
He is.
But again, it's like what this movie gives him to do.
Can you imagine how much money he would have had to be paid to join this cast?
He probably threw too much.
Yeah. And I feel so bad. Like, you know, they're all laying after the explosion of the Madison Square Garden. They're all laying down the pavement, and Hank Azaria goes, "You're all right." And like he's just
how
sitting
doing,
up, and I felt it really real. Like he was really not wanting to be there.
Yeah, he's like,
"Yeah, I'm all right," kind of thing.
That's probably one of the last scenes I ever filmed. And he was like, "I'm over this.
I really don't want to be here anymore." But look, anyway, I think he did what he could. Same as Matthew Broderick, Jean Reno, fantastic actor. Didn't really have much substance, unfortunately. So
that's it. But it's
not much he could do.
It's good. This movie obviously tried to, you know, grab an actor like him and appeal to an international audience as well, like especially like the French or European audience.
Yeah.
It's just a shame that they did obviously take such a stereotypical take at not just him, but the, you know, his
crew,
his French mates and stuff as well.
But he's actually my favorite character. I'll say it now.
Oh no, Hank Azaria.
I thought he was whingy. But anyway, let's go.
It's whingy.
Who's next? There's a character named Audrey Timmons. What
just
character about her?
You know, the... I don't know. I already mentioned the love story between Audrey and...
Oh, it's a son. Felt forced.
And Nick. It's just, obviously, the history that they've got where she left him, like, after he asked her to marry her, and it's like...
And spoken for 8 years.
Yeah, and then suddenly, you know... He's just so easily forgiving of her, and then they're like, "Oh, let's get it's coffee," like, and then she screws him over, and it's like, seriously, cut her loose,
yeah,
run, just run.
That's what. Look, I was saying this to my wife as we're listening to it. I'm like, dude, run, leave it.
She's
leave
not it. A nice person.
She does not want to be like a friend to you.
And obviously, they give her motives. You know, she's trying to better herself, and she's been getting screwed
it's
over
not
herself.
Good enough.
No, it's she's still a bad person.
Yeah. However, and, I do hate Harry Shearer. For the way he treats her.
I mean, of course. Of course. But this is Maria Patillo, the actress.
Look, she's not very good.
I can't think of another... I mean, I know she's appeared in... I looked up her filmography. She was in, like, a couple episodes of Friends.
Okay.
I think she did a bit of TV work, but nothing major. This is literally one of the worst actresses I've seen.
Yeah, look, I... Watching it today, I just...
Like, she's,
I was gritting my teeth. She is pretty terrible. She's like, you know, she it seemed like a child, really.
I mean, but maybe it's just her character, but just how, yeah, she...
Well, look, the doubt, she's kind of given terrible
dialogue,
dialogue to work with. But, I wasn't very happy with the performance. Who else we got? We got Victor Animal Pilotti, who is...
Hank Azaria.
Hey, Azaria! Simpsons reference.
This is where we probably...
Number one.
I'll plug this in, yeah. So he's the voice of Chief Wiggum Apu and Mo from The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's not the only one.
He's not the only Simpsons character.
We mentioned, obviously, Charles Kamen, which we mentioned. Harry Shearer, the voice of Kent Brockman.
Yep.
Another news guy, which is cool. So I just hear Kent Brockman when he's doing his role here. Mr. Burns, Flanders, Skinner, yep. And also Nancy Cartwright.
She appears.
Makes an appearance in Kamen's office.
It's a cameo, really.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
but, she's like, I think the story just walked past the window. It's like, thanks, Bart.
Notice that she's got a cast on her hand?
Yes.
And that just confused me when I watched it.
I think the actress, like, in real life had it.
Oh, absolutely. So she's... That gives it away. Like, she was kind of, like, maybe on the set or just mates with Shearer.
Yeah,
Rosaria,
that was like
do you want to just fill up spot?
She's probably visiting, being like, hey, you guys are both working on this movie. I'll check it out. I mean, I don't know the backstory, but interesting to find out what that was all about. But anyway, Victor, or Animal, let's just call him Animal.
He was good.
I enjoy him. He's like so New York-y. He's like, again, the stereotypes. He is so New York-y. But he's fun.
They trashed the garden. Like, oh, come on, mate. There's more things going on than that.
So the Knicks get showered.
It's like life or death scenarios.
I just like when he's just like Roach is like shooting something or like kicking his camera. He's like, yeah, all right.
You know, that's actually one of my favorite takeaways from this movie when I was younger as well. Is that's my favorite line. Is the way that he just reacts and goes, all right, very good.
Yeah, all right, very good. Very good. I think I say that. I say that a lot. All right, very good.
So, yeah, impressionable. He did it, once again, he did a good job.
And I enjoy his relationship with, like, his wife or whatever she is to him sort of thing. Like, he tells Audrey that's like, let's go find the nest, let's follow Nick. And he's, like, going out the window. She's like, why are you going out the window? It's like,
she's gonna kill me.
Can't tell her. She'll hurt me.
Likewise, at the end, it's like, that's my husband. I'm gonna kill him.
I'm gonna kill him. But yeah, and it's again like, yeah, she's
very, very.
I just like it. It's like that's kind of real. Like this is probably the most realness you get out of like just characters.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much where it ends. Everyone else is just like written, scripted, cardboard people.
Yeah,
just going along with it.
Yeah, I'm not happy with it. We got X-Men Colonel Anthony Hicks, who is Kevin Dunn. I find him quite a dumb character, I guess, but there's a few worse.
I mean, I think he works for just having this point of view of the military that we get.
Yeah.
But this movie sort of proposes that the military are quite dumb.
Quite
daft.
Incompetent.
Yeah.
Look, I don't mind Kevin Dunn, but...
Everybody,
Jason wrote on the notes, how dumb are the military? And I just said, well... Hicks must be dumb because he's demoted to the dumb dad in Transformers. But I think
his role in Transformers is better. You know, he works more as a comedic sort of. I can't really take him too seriously.
I thought he served a purpose. I really despised the other dumb character, which is Mayor Herbert. Which that one. If you're going to talk about two dumb characters, either Hicks or Mayor Herbert, it's Mayor Herbert anyway. And then we've got Sergeant O'Neill, Doug Savant from Desperate Housewives.
That's why. Apparently, he's also from like Melrose Place, but I think that's before my time.
Oh, that's back in the day.
But to me, I can't remember the character's name, but yeah, the husband of that character I'm thinking of.
He plays
the blonde one.
It's the same dude, though. Like, as in, he plays the same character in this that he does there.
Yes, an American guy.
But I thought I really like the way he plays like everything's a surprise to him. Everything's a surprise. He's like, yeah, fire.
I like how awkward he is that he walks into the room and he needs to talk to Hicks and he's just like, he's so professional, but at the same time just so on edge. He's like, excuse me, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. I really like it.
It's like a kid's coming to, like, he's just like a kid coming to the adults being like, can I talk? Or like, oh, I've got to do the right thing.
So he was good. And then we've already covered Harry Shearer as well, haven't we? So
yeah. I mean, like, he actually played his role good. And
absolutely.
You actually have hate for his character. And that's good because you're meant to.
Because he's a dick to Audrey.
He's a dick. He's a dick.
Treats her like crap. I says, oh, you want a promotion? Yeah, come out to dinner. You're married. Oh, well, that's whatever.
Something. Oh, he says something along the lines of, that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. What else can we talk about this film? I guess a big component, in fact, the biggest, I would say, above story, because there isn't really a story, is
the special effects.
Yeah, there's a big dinosaur creature running around. Yeah, special effects would play into it.
I got a couple of things to say about special effects. I mean, we've got a lot to say, but at the time, holy crap, this movie, especially for a young 12-year-old,
yeah,
the special effects were amazing.
I remember this movie looking fantastic.
Yeah.
Looking great.
I think it's just one of those things you look at it as a... I mean, when it came out, it was groundbreaking stuff. A lot of it was groundbreaking, but it was... I guess we could say it. It doesn't really hold up. Godzilla himself, you know, I think actually, for the most part, looks pretty awesome still.
Pretty decent, yeah.
Yeah. But like you've said previously, the buildings, for example, you know, during the chase scenes and stuff, yeah, just look like... CGI.
They look like, yeah, just CGI flats, sort of molds.
Yeah. To me, it actually, when I was watching it today, it just reminded me of like miniature sets and maybe a camera moving through miniature sets, but which means the detail is only so much that they can put into it.
But it's almost like, you know, it takes like Star Wars, you know, like they use miniatures there with the same sort of thing. It's just like a camera moving through them,
yeah,
but the sets had more detail than these buildings had.
Yeah, these were just kind of...
And these were CGI. They could have put anything on them.
Yeah.
But of course, money and, you know, the effects weren't as great back then. But we're talking not yet. We're talking 5 years after Jurassic Park. We're talking
one year after Lost World.
Yeah, 7 years after Terminator 2.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course, 1 year after The Lost World, where, you know, you had a T-Rex running around San Diego. Yeah,
trashing the place. So you kind of... Anyway, look, I thought for the most part Godzilla was pretty still stood up, other than when he's underground or if it's just in neutral lighting. So if it's just walking around at night time, but without any lights on him, so when there's nothing contrasting or anything,
right? Yeah,
he looks crap. He looks like a video game, and same with when they're under the ground, like in the subway and stuff. He just looks like a video game, like no depth or texture. But then the moment you get he's outside and you get one of those big spotlights move across him, you can see the detail of the skin, and it actually looks really good.
Yeah, it's still now. Well, it's funny those shots where they go over, you know, where light and the camera pans over. Mm. Yeah, you do see those detail. It's funny when there are some shots of him sort of being still.
Mm.
And when there's those contrasting lights, sometimes the light just doesn't match. Even take like when you have his foot, when he first appears in New York and his foot lands like on the road.
Yeah.
And it's like the lighting on his foot just doesn't match the rest of the lighting. And it's like...
And I thought the same about some of the baby Zillas as well.
And that's when they just don't look like they're being like lit up by... Yeah. I assume it would be like fluorescent lighting and stuff within the building.
But they don't quite. I mean, I remember them looking really awesome back in the day.
I mean, it's one of those things where practical, again, is sometimes better. And you have shots of like when they're coming out of the egg, and that's all practical.
Yeah.
And they're sticking their head into the elevator, that scene. Yeah. It looks real. It looks cool. And I'm like, even though it's a giant puppet, it's like, it looks like there's something there.
Yeah.
And then when you see them just sort of walking around, it's like, yeah. Not there. Like, there's just an absence of depth and realism.
I wonder how many practical of Godzilla himself, like elements that were being incorporated. There's one when the foot crashes down and car runs into it. That's practical. You can tell that car is.
Oh yeah, I hope they. Yeah, I'd imagine that would have been.
But
real.
There's not too much more that they could do with because of the sheer size of him.
So. Yeah, they couldn't have done a sort of animatronic. That would have been.
No. Awesome. Maybe the animatronic.
His mouth. The taxi scene into his mouth. With the teeth and all that. Yeah, that would have been practical.
The eye scene when he dies.
Yeah, like, that would have been practical.
So, spoiler, he dies. a couple of things. I think you got a groovy little fact here, didn't you, about fish somewhere along the
line? Yeah, 2,000 foam fish were used.
That's awesome.
Made to create the fish pile, which is like, yes, go.
You know what I didn't get? Why the fish were still flapping about in the subway.
They've been fresh. I don't know, man.
Fish only last a couple of minutes outside of water.
Anyway. But yeah, look, special effects overall, just pretty dated, I gotta say. But, you know, there are a lot of cool still like shots as well, but just a lot of it doesn't look great. And it's sad because a lot of this movie is filmed at night. There's a lot of night shots. And we all know that special effects at night are easier to do because you don't have to... go into the detail.
Same with the rain. If you can get something wet or in the rain, it just looks so much better.
How much rain was in this movie? It was like raining the whole time.
No, it's a plot point. Like they say, like Harry Shearer's character says it, you know, we're going to meet with this person to ask, you know, when is this rain going away?
Yeah, that's
one of the
it.
First things you hear him say.
That's true.
One of the things I really loved about this, right? Well, okay, I'm going to say it, a hate and a love for the special effects. I really didn't like the baby Zillas when they're moving around. Like, you can tell, especially now they haven't stood up to the test of time. I've got an app on my phone, which is Jurassic Park Alive.
Yeah.
The augmented reality that I get on that is more convincing than those.
Is it?
Yeah.
I've seen some of the photos you sent me. I'm like, they don't look that great.
Well, it's because it's a little raptor in a freezer, right? So it's not right. But no, generally, I was looking at it today going, no, look, I can... My mobile phone can produce better
of course,
augmented
yeah.
reality than that.
Welcome to 2018.
But something I really loved was the efforts put into the sets. And this is always, we always nod back to practical effects.
Yeah.
Practical's great when they put to the effort to dressing things as well. The set, when they're, before you even get to New York, so when he's in the big giant footprint, but then it zooms out and you see the path, like it's a substantial size plot that they would have had to have done that with. And it's not CG. That's like the broken house and all that. It goes through.
I think they made one footprint, which is real, which is in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah, and the rest will be CG. But like the house that's had its foot smashed through.
Oh, yeah, sure,
like,
yeah.
As the helicopters are tracking above, you can tell that they're putting in an amazing effort. And likewise with Madison Square Gardens, as they're climbing up out of this hole. It's just dressed really, really well.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there's CG elements there, obviously, but you can tell that they've gone to detail on some of those things feel like you're in a subway or make you feel like you're...
I give that credit to Emmerich for creating a disaster movie.
Yeah, yeah.
he knows how to do it.
Which certainly is his forte. What about some action sequences, like moving on from special effects?
Well, you've already mentioned the, you know, like Godzilla being chased through the buildings and stuff.
Mm.
There were definitely... I think there's only actually two chase scenes with like the fighter parts and stuff, but it's just one too many.
Yeah,
it's like we already got it.
Mm.
And you know, now I watch it and say it doesn't look that great, but then like they do it again.
To me I think they're just the same scene.
Like a lot of the same shots.
It's just a really long version of the scene split up over the course
of the movie.
They could
have taken 15 minutes out of this movie.
I mean, it's funny when you see Godzilla run and then out of the buildings come like 100 helicopters come out of nowhere.
Yeah, it is crazy.
It's the same thing. You're just following it. They're shooting. They can't hit shit. Like they're just so terrible. And then it just ends.
It's mad how he can just disappear. Like they're locking onto him. They can see him. He goes into a building and then suddenly he rocks up behind them. And it's
where's
like,
the
how do they
watch?
Not...
Where's the helicopter right up in the sky watching the whole
seeing,
thing?
You know, like they've got three planes following him. Yeah. Where's the other guy like surveying everything and being like, I can clearly see where he's going. You know, like. Like cop chase scenes are like planned better than this.
Yeah. Look, I think there's still elements to it. You said something about which part of the movie did you enjoy the most?
I do really enjoy the third act.
Yeah, look, I've got a note here about that. So you mean the car chase, right?
Well, I mean everything from them finding the nest onwards.
I actually define it as two different
acts. You reckon?
So and the reason being is they conclude the movie at the end of the Madison Square Garden sequence.
That's true. So, yeah, this movie does kind of have a fourth act.
And he, you know, Godzilla coming out of the ground.
I mean, it's a good 15 minutes of Godzilla chase after it. So.
And it's awesome.
I mean, I enjoy it. Yeah.
It's my favorite part of the movie.
No, but everything from them finding the nest, because, you know, we talk about the rain and the gloom.
Mm.
The whole movie is, like, very tonally grim and sort of dull. When they get to Madison Square Garden... Yeah, especially when the baby Zillas start hatching.
Yeah.
They're all in like lit sort of area. It's all, you know, they're in this building. It's sort of an arcade kind of thing.
You get the slapstick stuff of baby Zillas sliding all over the floor with barbed wire.
It's fine. Maybe it is the raptors in the kitchen sort of thing that I'm going for with Jurassic Park. That I'm just like, I'm enjoying them being chased by smaller versions of that big thing we saw already.
Tell you what, they definitely make the French bloody military or secret service look like a bunch of idiots, don't they?
Well, they clue on pretty fast. Like they're like, oh, we smell like fish. Oh shit! And then
but like the four guys that die in that sequence.
Yeah,
they just die stupid deaths. Like they're military.
Stupid deaths.
They should be able to do better than what they did. Like, why does the guy shoot the door? What the hell? You know, there's 100 things out there. You know, you're just gonna weaken the door. Keep the door the way it is.
Don't shoot the door.
And you know. Buddy, you got a machine gun. When there's two coming at you, from just pop them in the head.
Oh, pop instead. Pop them in the head.
But anyway, look, the car chase scene. I enjoyed the Madison Square Gardens and the car chase. I do agree, like that last portion of the movie is probably the most exciting.
Yeah. Especially that car chase scene, like, you get to see Godzilla running around in full form. You see most of his body in a lot of shots. Whereas at the start of the movie, maybe it's to build suspense, but a lot of the earlier shots of him, they're all from the ground.
Yeah.
They're all sort of half of his body pointing up. And it is a lot of him just stepping on cars and scraping his tail on the bed. Yeah. It's sort of like... so big.
Yeah. Whereas, yeah, those...
Well, this is him. Godzilla has... Yeah. Godzilla develops a character and he's like, I have a purpose and a motive.
Yeah.
And suddenly in that final 15 minutes, he's pissed off and he's doing something.
Yeah.
Like, he has personality, finally.
And he's trashing everything.
Yeah, the rest of the movie, he's just sort of prancing around and then running because he's scared. Which is sad because he's just an animal. But yeah, it's just...
He's just an animal. And it is definitely sad when he finally, as you would expect, he meets his demise, but it's very clever how they do it. They get him to run onto the Brooklyn Bridge, which is a suspension bridge, and he dives underneath one of the supports, I guess, and gets caught in all the wires, and I think that was pretty clever.
It's a good trap.
And then it's a trap. and then the Air Force come in and a couple of F-16s or something and just destroy him. How funny is that, though? You know, like, they pass O'Neill, or they say we're driving down Broadway, and then O'Neill's coming the other direction or something.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there's chaos, and then they go, no, turn around. And then as they turn around, Godzilla falls
over. Yeah, I always used to think that was Nick. That was Nick's plan to make him fall down. I was like, oh, that's how clever.
It was silly. Pull the handbrake. Godzilla falls over, destroys a few buildings as he does it, and then they throw out the taxi ID, which is clever.
I get it. But it just happens so quickly. Like, O'Neill picks up the plate, the ID.
Yeah, it's like they must have literally been out the front of the taxi
taxi office. Yeah. Like, it's like, how did he get the book written on paper?
Yeah.
It's not like a digital computer thing. Yeah. It's just an example of the silliness of how this movie is.
It's terribly written, but it's just fun.
It is. This movie is better when it's just fun. Yeah. When it's just having... Like the scene where Godzilla's just chasing them in the taxi, like, it's just fun.
Yeah.
The Babyzilla's all just fun.
Yeah.
It's dumb, but it's fun.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
But is the movie dated?
Yes.
We've already talked about the effects, and I think we've said yes. They're not perfect. They're not horrendous, but yes, pretty dated.
Yeah.
But there's other things. Technology. The technology that you see. That does date this movie.
Yeah, the movie camera is VHS.
This is 98, but this is very much a 90s movie. There's VHS tapes that you see.
Yeah.
The computers and the tracking systems that they use, like the military, it's like, what are we watching?
The Kodak cameras were a good one. Were a big one for me. Now, Kodak must have contributed because he gets the camera from a vending machine.
Sure.
Pepsi must have, because there's a vending machine smashed in the tunnel.
That Pepsi just were like 90s marketing gods. Yeah. They were in every movie.
There's a few others. And Laura, my wife, would get quite annoyed at me, because as I was watching it, I was like, sponsored by, whenever I saw somebody, because there was a lot of advertising.
Sponsored by Blockbuster Video.
I didn't see that. I don't understand that.
Madison Square Garden, there was...
Was there a Blockbuster thing there?
Giant... like, lit up sign of Blockbuster Video.
Interesting.
It's great. Like, no one has any mobile phones. They have to go to a pay phone. But I did notice after they've killed Godzilla, Nick's pants start ringing.
But you didn't capture it. I've written a response to this. It's bloody the Frenchies. It's Jean Reno's phone. It's the same phone they had. It's the same phone that he had in Madison Square Gardens. Or wherever it was.
He did. No, he uses a payphone, and then he's like, I'll try this one.
No, he uses the mobile phone first.
Yes.
And he can't get the signal, and then he walks up and uses a payphone. So he's still got it in his pocket.
I retract my statement.
And because it's Gene Reno's phone, he knows how to call it. So, interesting stuff.
That may or may not make the podcast.
No, I want to, because I want my fact to be in there. Don't steal this from me. Now, there's also a mention of the Twin Towers. I don't know if you know that.
There's a few shots of the Twin Towers, and there's also the reference to...
the bombing.
Yes.
In 1993, there was a Trade Center bombing where 6 people died. It was a car bomb in the basement, I think.
And that was one of the worst...
It was the worst. So 6 people died, including a pregnant lady, which is really sad. But over 1,000 people were injured. So it was a substantial thing.
Right, yes.
So it does make sense to say this is the worst thing that's happened since.
It is. It's awkward kind of watching. Is awkward the right word? Like, watching this movie now, and then obviously to refer to something as the World Trade Center bombings.
Yeah.
We're in a post-9/11 world.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was sort of like, if you weren't really thinking about it, you would assume he was referring to 9/11 itself.
Yeah, but obviously, talking about something prior to that. If you watch other movies like, you know, Armageddon and stuff, same thing, like, because the New York skyline's the same.
Yeah, yeah.
So the trade centers get hit by meteors and stuff. It's like,
Ouch. Yeah. Yeah. That's like, still too soon.
And another reason why it's dated is you probably wouldn't get this as much. The Frenchies, I'll call them, they are incredibly stereotypical.
And that dates it.
And that dates it because, you know, I would say, even though it's only been 20 years, there's been a lot of progress made in what is respectful.
They just do it better. Like, if you're going to put some French dudes on screen, like, do it better. Yeah. Like, they just...
Don't just get them bagging out French roast coffee and get them talking about how there's no croissant. Okay? Say, come on, Roland, you're German. You know,
like, I call this you coffee. Know what it's like to... I call this America.
Anyway, and do you have anything else regarding the dating on that?
I do. the word retard.
I mean, you would not
find a movie these days unless
that's the R word now.
I was looking for, you know, like, to refer Hannibal's wife. I keep forgetting her name, but she yells out to him like, Victor, you're retard. He's like, you can't say that.
No, you definitely wouldn't get away.
I mean, I still giggle at it because it's just like, it's crazy.
Well, look, in all fairness, you'll get away with that stuff, and rightfully so, if you're doing a period piece of something. So if a movie was showcasing the 90s, then it's going to be there. Yeah. But that was very much a world where it was just simply,
And that's where it probably shouldn't be, sort of thing. But it's something, even something little like that.
In all fairness, I'm very glad that that's not the kind of world that we're in at the moment anymore as well.
It. You also mentioned earlier Mayor Ebert. And Gene, his aide.
Yeah.
And that's Michael Lerner and Laurie Goldman.
Right.
They're actually a very dated parody of two film critics.
Right.
Now, these two film critics had previously pretty much bagged out Emmerich and Devlin. That's the one I was thinking of. Earlier films, Stargate from 94 and Independence Day, of course, from 96.
Two great films.
Siskel and Ebert is who I'm talking about. I was trying to find the names.
Yeah.
There. So they're basically Mayor Ebert and, Gene Siskel is his name. And they're, just basically a piss take on them too. Very dated. And that's all I've got.
Oh, there we go. Well, I think, that's a substantial snapshot of this bloody movie. I reckon now is a good time for a bit of an ad break. What do you reckon?
I think so.
All right. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Luke.
And I'm Jason.
And we are the guys from That Film Stew.
Do you like movie reviews and want to keep up to date with the latest in movie and TV news?
Then That Film Stew is the podcast for you. Join us every 2 weeks for some good times, laughs, and firm opinions on the things we love.
That's right. There's a new podcast released every 2 weeks on iTunes and SoundCloud. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as That Film Stew Podcast.
Or head to our website, thatfilmstewpodcast.weebly.com.
That Film Stew Podcast. Listen, comment, follow, share.
So let's just jump straight back into it. Cover a couple of other things.
We've already touched on it a little bit. Let's talk about the whole Madison Square Garden.
All right.
Sort of part of the film.
Let's go there.
Let's go there. Like I said, you know, like, it's fun. It's the brighter part of the movie.
I think so.
Brighter in color, not in.
No, I think in tone. In tone as well. I think tonally is brighter as well.
It does get a bit goofy as well. You know, like, you got it, the slapstick stuff. They're all running around. Matthew Broderick screaming.
The whole run this way, and then, you know, that cliche where one's always last, and then they just come around the corner and they're like,
not that way.
And then Matthew Broderick still gets overtaken and still ends up at the back. You idiot.
That's some good stuff.
But then if he didn't do that, then he wouldn't have thrown the basketballs and the gumballs down.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, which then leads to that
everything's
funny
choreographed for a reason.
Yeah, that's right.
But I do like the whole, one of the reasons I like the scene, all this
sequence.
This sequence, this whole third and I guess fourth act of the film is it just, obviously the movie has set up from early on, well, not too early, but halfway through, it's like there's potentially a nest. There could be more than the threat of, oh my god, we could have lots of Godzillas. And then they find, what is it, like 4 or 5 or 6 kind of eggs, and they're like, well, let's attach these bombs and let's destroy them before anything else goes down. But then they turn the lights on and there's like over 200
or something like
heaps. So the basically the movie changes, and it is kind of like, in a way, such a disjointed act.
Yeah,
like it, like tonally different, but also just story wise it's a completely different premise. It changes the whole story point of the movie. It's not about...
To be honest, for me, it feels like it's the only time during the movie there's any real stakes. It just feels like it's been inconsequential. Like, Godzilla's just kind of kicked everybody's asses, and then he's died underwater, and it's like...
died?
At the time, I was like, when I first watched it, I remember, dead, yeah. I was like, because he's seeing me falling, he's falling down unconscious under the water, you're like, they got him. That's it. Like, yeah. Two direct hits with a torpedo, you're dead. And so...
Just made him stronger.
But this sequence, it does feel totally out of touch, but I feel like there's more stakes. Like, you know, the way that they realize that there's way too many. They're not going to be able to get them all.
Yeah.
And they say that in French too. He doesn't say it said. So it's kind of like this feels like it's a little bit of like an inside thing. Like it's like, oh, we don't have enough explosives, man.
Yeah. Like, we're in trouble.
And then he goes, shit. But then just that, and then them stowing away into the newsroom to give the report. That's the only time I feel like there's any real connection with those characters, and there's only any real threat. Like they're like, bomb us. Doesn't matter what happens, just bomb us. Just
they do actually, us. Yeah, they do.
So it's the only time all
these
I feel,
cardboard characters. It's like they are actually making the.
They're just making a sacrifice.
Yeah,
and they do it, and they knock it, and you know it's just that suspense, even though there is pretty much zero suspense there, but. The idea that they've closed the blinds and then Gene Renner opens the blind and then whoop, there's an animal right there ready to get him. And then just as they abseil down, they all burst through the window. It's a cool, groovy little sequence. I like it.
That's fun. Yeah, there's a little bit of tension and then it's just like...
And then they get to the lobby actually, where there's just a million of them and...
It doesn't make sense, but it's fun. You know, like they shoot the chandeliers and they're running through it. And if you kind of watch it, it's like some of them, there's no reason why some of them couldn't just bite their face.
Yeah.
But whatever.
I don't know how they hadn't just ventured outside by that point either.
Yeah, that's true. Like, stop. Not because there were glass doors and oh my god.
No, but they were just those handles, those push handles.
Yeah, exactly.
Because as soon as they run up to them, they
bang. Well, I assume they were locked. Which just makes me have.
As they run out the door, they literally hit the thing and run through.
They do. Oh, man.
Oh, this movie. It's 1998. Yeah, whatever.
I should mention, you mentioned the.
What did I mention?
The newsroom. Yeah. Or the broadcast room.
Yeah.
There's a small toy alien.
Is it?
Yeah, from Independence Day.
Oh, that's cool.
It's visible on the computer screen, I guess.
Do you mean where they're recording or where the guy's in a switchboard room?
No, where they're broadcasting out to. Oh, God.
I didn't catch that. That's cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
If you go back, if you want to watch it again.
I love little Easter eggs like that. What did you reckon about the baby Zillas? Like, we've talked loosely about it. I really liked it because it was... For me, as a 12-year-old, it was a very strong comparison to raptors in the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean...
Man-sized animals on the hunt. It's really cool.
It makes it sort of more intimate and, there's just more of... Mm. They can have, more stuff on the ground. Something for them to actually come up against. You know, you can't really fight this giant beast. So they draw into the story.
Do you know what I really liked about them? There was just too many of them. That's something I really liked. Exactly, it was insurmountable odds. There was just nothing they can do about it.
If you were to put one raptor, one velociraptor from Jurassic Park against a baby Godzilla, it's like the velociraptor would win. It's smarter.
Oh, yeah,
would you rather go up against three velociraptors or 100 baby Godzillas?
I don't want to go against even one raptor, but I would probably go against 100.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I feel like I could
dodge them.
I feel like I could get out of Madison Square Garden, but I don't think I can get out of the kitchen.
Yeah. Totally. Not. Yeah. You will die.
The
design of them are right. I didn't see many teeth in their mouth.
I mean,
they're very gummy. But how are they killing people if they're gummy?
You gum your face off. Suck your head.
So really, the French guys just got licked to death, really.
I'm going to lick you. Yeah.
It's like sucking on limbs
or something. A bit of Godzilla saliva in your eye. I mean, that'll get you. That'll take you out.
Bad breath, remember? But I like the practical elements with the Babyzilla. So we said it before, like when they're breaking out the eggs. And most of the time, there's a scene where they break through the door. But it's not like a bang. It's like pushes through.
Yeah.
And you see all the hinges and everything buckle. That's all practical.
Yeah.
And then the head comes through. It's like forcing its way through. You're like, yeah, good work.
That's
top stuff effects, guys.
Yeah, no, that's the dinosaur lover in me just being a sucker about this is great. Yeah. This is fantastic. But it is, I reckon a small part of me, even though they established the story of the nest partway through the movie, I do think they were like, okay, we need a third act. What do we do? Let's take the... third act from Jurassic Park. Let's take the
third act
the nest from Aliens Aliens.
Let's take the San Diego scene from The Lost World. Let's push all that together.
Pretty much, yeah. They just pulled elements.
They created this little mismatch.
I feel like they just picked bits from things that have done well and people love, and then they put it together. And it's like, you know, kind of cheap, but
it's like
whatever.
You got my money anyway.
I'm already here watching it.
And when I say my money, it was my mother's. Thank you. So let's move on from the babies. The death of Godzilla. Sad times, you know.
Yeah, they kill him. I mean, they kill him. He's dead. You see his eye. They make it a
clear point. How sad is it when he's, like, trapped? He's a trapped animal. He gets hit in one side by the F-18s or whatever the hell they are, 16s, whatever.
Well, the thing with this movie, they do make it clear that he is an animal. They make the point of having the characters at least discuss the fact that he's just an animal. He's just either looking for food or
just trying to breed,
trying to nest somewhere. You know, like, he's not trying to hurt anyone, and he doesn't. Godzilla isn't actually trying to attack people until they piss him off. Yeah, they actually, when they eventually kill him, it is, I guess, sad. because it's just like they've just put down animal. Now, the director of Godzilla, Mothra, and King Ghidorah, Giant Monsters All Out Attack, big name, a big title. What's his name? Shusuke Kaneko. He stated that this version of, like, these filmmakers who made this movie, they, for some reason, were portraying Americans as being unable to accept a creature that cannot be put down.
Yeah, right.
So if we can't kill them with our guns and our weapons, then we should fear it.
I
mean, they literally just shoot it for the majority of this movie.
I mean, it is an existential threat at the end of it, you know, the way it breeds and stuff. So they kind of got to put it down. They have to, it's got to go.
Just like any bug.
And it's the French's fault, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, blame the French. If you're going to blame anyone, don't blame the Americans.
They mopped up pretty well. All right. So there's a couple of movies were planned, I believe.
Yeah. So like I said before, there were three movies. I don't think anything was sketched down or anything like that. But they wanted a trilogy of some sort. So they left this movie open. They did kill Godzilla, but there was that surviving
egg.
This was a post-credit scene before post-credit scenes.
Yeah, look, that's what I said. This movie was ahead of its time, just poorly executed, that's all.
I mean, the post-credit scene should have been after the credits.
And then there was a TV show that followed this as well, right?
Yeah, so I mentioned earlier, Godzilla the Series. In more detail, it followed the Humanitarian Environmental Analysis Team, or HEAT, a research team led by Dr. Nick Totopoulos, this time voiced by Ian Ziering, as they battle giant mutant monsters, which frequently appear in the wake of the events from this movie.
Right.
They kind of redo the hatch. So the hatching scene in the movie, as it just hatched, they actually have the characters present when it hatches.
Right.
So the baby Godzilla attaches itself to Nick and thinks it's basically Nick is its mother. So the Godzilla's like good in the show. Well, they use Godzilla to basically fight the other mutated things. Some returning characters in the show, Elsie Chapman, but this time voiced by Charity James. I got Mendel Craven, voiced by Malcolm Daner. So the actor from the movie voices him, which is good. Major Hicks, Kevin Dunn, comes back to voice him.
Hooray.
Audrey Timmons, this time voiced by Paget Brewster, probably for the best. Animal, surprisingly not voiced by Hank Azaria, who does voice work. Yep. Joe Pantoliano voices him.
Yep.
Maya Ebert is back. Michael Lerner, so from the movie as well.
Yep.
And Philippe Roach is Keith Zarabatjak. I don't know.
Because Jean Reno does not do voice work.
He does not.
I'm sure that's the only reason he didn't do this.
But yeah, it was funny. This show was just like one of those. It was like a time where all big movies were getting like TV series. You know, Jumanji got one, Men in Black.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's plenty going on.
Yeah, and pretty much every Disney movie as well.
Yeah, right. Cool. All right, well, look, I think we captured it. I think it's time for a quiz. What do you reckon?
I almost forgot we did these. But I've got one prepared for
That's
you.
That's fantastic. I'm so excited. We don't have a producer today, as we discussed. So
we're going to have to time this ourselves.
Oh, no. So I haven't had a very good track record of these. You usually surprise me with these ones. So be gentle.
Well, I wrote this before I knew you were just going to be watching it this morning.
Oh, you reckon I'm going to be right?
Oh, no. Today. Well, I don't know. Are you ready?
Okay, so no producers' presence and buttons. Instead, I am the controller of time. We are ready to start.
10 right questions, 60 now. Seconds. Oh, wow. What song is Nick singing during his opening scene?
Shit, can't remember.
What 7-year study was Nick conducting?
Chernobyl earthworms.
Well, yeah. Where does Nick first meet Hicks? It's the location of the big footprint.
It's not Panama.
It is Panama.
Oh, okay. Panama.
Oh, damn. That doesn't count. What news station does Audrey, Animal, Lucy, and Cayman work for?
NWS? NBC?
Nah.
Okay.
How many toes does Godzilla have?
Three. Three plus a little, like,
yeah,
whatever,
Duke floor. I'll take it. When Philippe is craving a croissant, what snack does he settle with? A donut, yes. Which very tall building do the fighter pilots destroy? Yes. The goddamn Chrysler building. Which dinosaur makes an appearance on a small television screen?
I saw a monster.
How much time does the military give Nick and company to get out of Madison Square Garden?
6 minutes. 6.5 minutes.
And which suspension bridge is used to finally
take
down...
Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah, not too bad, man.
Right,
too
and
bad.
That's it. There we go. All right.
Nick is singing in the rain.
Oh, he is too. Of course he bloody is.
Panama, yes. WIDF News.
WIDF. Okay.
Of course, Four Toes. Yeah, the goddamn Chrysler building. And Barney. Barney the dinosaur.
Okay, look, all I remember is that octopus.
There is that, but also there's also another scene with Bunny.
I wonder if that octopus is stock footage from a Godzilla movie.
It is. It's not a Godzilla movie. Or it might be.
Bet it is.
It might be...
It would not make sense have a stop motion.
No, it's from a monster movie, but it's not Godzilla, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Cool. All right, I did all right.
That's not bad.
Thank you very, very much for that.
Was that like 8? Yeah. Oh, no, 7. You got 7 out of 10.
7. All
pretty
right.
Good.
Cool. Well, I guess we'll move on from that riveting experience to our ratings. It's time. Worm Guy, what do you got?
Oh, damn it. again, guilty pleasure for me, but I'm trying not to let that sway me too much.
Yeah.
This movie is pretty poorly written. both dialogue and story-wise, how events and things unfold.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you just want to have fun, it is pretty fun. I enjoy it. I don't know why.
I enjoyed it.
It is. Yeah, it's just... When the movie wants to just have silly fun, it's when it's thriving at its best.
Like the way that O'Neill's like kind of like a clumsy military
officer. Again, with characters like that as well, when they're just sort of being silly. Nick just being awkward and sort of not really sure of himself, but sometimes confident, sometimes not.
Any scene without Audrey in it, like when they just haven't
pretty
used
much,
her,
like,
pretty good. As well.
I mean, she's the worst character, so she brings this movie down. So,
yeah.
But other characters like Animal and Roach, like, they lift this up.
Yeah.
There probably could have been a better movie out of this.
No, totally.
But yeah, like, both nostalgic and just how I remember it. You know, like, I think every viewing it does get worse for me, but I still enjoy it. I mean, honestly, it's 3 out of 5.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. That's fair, man.
I mean, for the time, the effects, not perfect, but, you know, pretty good. Oh, pretty good.
For the time, dude, I think they were mind-blowing, actually.
I thought they were, but...
I mean, and like I said, the
like
chase
anything.
Scene is still... It holds up. I think it's awesome.
I mean, it's fun, isn't it?
Like, watching the cars fly left, right, and center as he's running through the street. I think this is cool. So, mine, okay. Look, what I would say, if this movie didn't come out in 1998, and it came out with the same kind of feel, like with Bryan Cranston and stuff, that the 2014 one did.
But this story,
I reckon this would be a killer.
Like,
I think
a true monster movie.
If the characters had better dialogue and you had like a really gritty, serious tone to it, this movie would have kicked ass, I reckon. And it's very unfortunate that it was released when it was, and it had the writing that it did, and it had the actress that it did. But all in all, I think, like, yeah, if... I think 2014 exists because of this movie.
Sure.
And this was a way of showing American audiences what real Godzilla is, right? Like, 2014 was.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because they'd already screwed it up once. So if this screw up didn't exist, I think the one we would have got in this modern era would have resembled what we had in 1998, but it would have been so much more polished and so much better.
I mean, this would be a controversial thing to say, but, like, you know, I mean, I guess it's because it's what I knew it as at the time, but I prefer a monster movie where the monster is just running around and, you know, causing problems and destroying things. Whereas the Godzilla we get in 2014 and, you know, it resembles the Japanese Godzilla films where, you know, he is a legendary creature. He's a protector of humans and, you know, they worship him and they have tributes to him. I mean, that is Godzilla.
Mm.
But to me personally, which is, you know, not probably the correct viewpoint, you know, like, this is my Godzilla. Yeah, we still get big lizard monster.
I still haven't done my rating yet, so stop taking my time.
Sorry, my bad. Sorry,
Ellie. But I do feel like things like Pacific Rim and stuff fill that void of...
That's where you get
dumb, monster movies that are just well-polished and all that. So I guess in a way, like, the current Monster Universe, not Monster Universe, but the big one with, you know, King Kong and all that.
Oh, the legendary ones,
They're really kind of reflecting on source material, which is great. But my review, I liked it. Huge nostalgia value, but I think this movie is so far from good in regards to writing and performance that it's 2.5, really.
Cool. Now,
the special effects were awesome in the time, I think. Now, definitely not so much, but there was still enough sequences for me to go, that was worth watching again. Probably won't watch it again for a little while. So that's it. 2.5 VHS tapes out of 5. 3 and a 2. It gets a 5 and a 5.5 out of between the 2.
It's a 5.5 out of 5.
All right.
Whoa.
Okay, guys. So that was our rewind to 1998. Godzilla.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Rewind and Review. We're both looking forward to bringing you more of them. Indeed. For any feedback, either positive or negative, or any rewind requests, you can email us at thatfilmsviewpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, please do, because we can only improve this podcast with your feedback. Or you can reach us out, of course, on That Film Stew or Rewind and Reviews Facebook pages as well. Don't forget that.
Speaking of the Facebook pages, if you were wondering what our next Rewind and Review is going to be, you've got to check out Rewind and Reviews Facebook page.
Indeed.
We'll post about our upcoming show there, so give the page a like.
So I hate to say it, but intern James still hasn't had any luck sorting out our magical rewinding VCR contraption gizmo thing, so we're going to be sitting it out here.
For now, at least, the next episode anyway, we will still be stuck in 1998.
Yep, with that being the case, the next movie we'll be reviewing will be another movie celebrating its 20th anniversary. And another movie from 1998.
It'll have to be. Keep an eye out on Facebook for clues and to find out if we can get our rewinding machine working again.
Thank you all for listening. This has been another Rewind and Review. See you on our next trip.
Please rewind this cassette before returning it to your video library.
Ha 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 ha! Ha 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 ha! Just testing, just seeing volume.